Over the past 35 years, 2.8 million acres of farmland have vanished forever. At the Ontario Farmland Trust, we fight to preserve farmland. Visit us at OntarioFarmlandTrust.ca.
Trust. You can't handle me. Hold up. Ain't you Nathaniel B?
What is it?
Get the
tune in at Wednesdays at 2 p.m. for the program. I, your host Nate, will go over a variety of different genres and themes. I sometimes call my friends and do dumb stuff, and if you guys like dumb stuff, you're gonna love my show. So yeah, Wednesdays, 2, be there.
Hello and welcome to Salt Licht and Rapture. I'm your host, Nishan Tung. Salt Licht and Rapture is a sonic exploration of, to quote Virginia Woolf, violent waves of emotion. Featuring both known and lesser known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 20... 20-
Turtle Island to Palestine. Occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine. You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
Welcome, everyone. You are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario.
Kia ora koutou, good morning from Aotearoa, New Zealand. My name is Marilyn Garson, and I am Tangata Titiriti. We are a people of the treaty. That means that my place in this country is shaped by the vision of our founding treaty. And I recognize Mana Motuhake, the unceded sovereignty of our indigenous Maori people. Welcome to this Global Jews for Palestine webinar. We are GJP. I want to thank Haymarket Books for hosting us, and I also want to acknowledge everyone who is participating in today's global fast for Gaza. I'm going to tell you the story of GJP. Then we have three far-flung speakers. GJP speaks with all the accents of six continents, and we are thrilled that Gabor Mate has joined us. If you have questions, please write them in the chat, and we should have time for some questions at the end. I lived in Gaza for 4 years, and I worked partly for UNRWA. Each day, I see the destruction of my home and the community that welcomed me. I cannot get used to it, and I will not stop calling attention to it. I have written two books about living in Gaza and about Jewish solidarity in New Zealand. I co-founded Alternative Jewish Voices. My co-founder and I also lead New Zealand's only independent minyan, an online space for traditional prayer where Jews can express both our religion and our principles. Those two are not in conflict. In February 2020, we were invited to join anti-Zionist groups from a dozen countries online. In common, we all worked in constant partnership with Palestinian groups. And we were all trying to hold back the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism, that definition that conflates anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. The definition was rolling over us because we were each reacting in isolation. We were each inventing the wheel. So we began to meet monthly online to share experience and strategy. GJP is an astonishing bank of experience, individual and organizational. In our monthly Zoom meetings, my little collective was sitting next to Jewish Voice for Peace or independent Jewish voices, I used to ask if we could have a smaller Zoom box. I was really struggling to stay on my feet while being driven out of my synagogue and vilified by my community. In GJP meetings, I got to know people who had made justice their life's work. They had been through all the retribution. GJP is a community of values, a place to learn and be encouraged. If you are part of a group that would benefit from such company, please contact us. In our first years together, GJP learned how to bring our geography to bear on issues and events. The mayor of Barcelona cut ties with the Israeli occupation, and we spoke up for her from around the world. After the killing of Shireen Abu Akleh, Palestine protests were banned in Berlin and here in Wellington. GJP made our local news international. My sense of remoteness began to shift as my friends' accomplishments became ours. When the charitable status of the Jewish National Fund was revoked in Canada, we won. And then we set aside some meeting time to learn from the strategy that had worked. Sharing those victories felt so important. Last year, after 4.5 years in our Zoom boxes, we finally met in person in London. By then, Gaza's nightmare had begun. The fact of global inaction had shaken the way that I understood my world. It was both a comfort and an urgent obligation to be together and to plan. Let me be clear, GJP would not reduce the suffering of Gaza to being merely our opportunity. Rather, we place this genocide at the center of our vision of the world that we need to build. This one is broken. So we marched with the Jewish bloc in a sea of 200,000 people to insist that Palestine must be free. In workshops, we picked apart the meaning of Jewish solidarity. Any ally jams her body, mind, speech, privilege like a spanner into the workings of violence and race. She refuses to normalize what should not be normal. She does not let others ignore what power is trying to hide. Jewish solidarity also disavows every attempt to reduce Palestine to a conversation between Jews. Palestinians need to speak. We help to deflect disingenuous charges of anti-Semitism so that Palestinians can be heard. We reckon with our implicated status in the systems of oppression so that we become part of the change that we seek. We become the walking proof that Jews are not threatened by others' equal standing in this world. On the contrary, we are all threatened by a world in which genocidal violence can be met with silence and complicity. We also have work to do within our communities. Too many Jewish institutions have defended one genocide in the name of another. Our future does not lie in asking for the marginal reform of those legacy institutions. Our future lies in building Jewish community that does not replicate the harms we are witnessing. It is not enough to be anti. We must breathe life into a new liberatory Jewishness. GJP has laid out our vision in the manifesto that we are discussing today. We are here to share the weight of this intolerable moment, to respond with our manifesto as well as with our rage, and to commit to the work of building anti-Zionist Jewish community. Global Jews for Palestine now has member groups in 21 countries on 6 continents. We are determined to move this world because nothing less will do. If you are part of a Jewish anti-Zionist group seeking community, please get in touch. Our first speaker today is Wieland Hoban from Germany. Wieland is a composer and an academic translator. He is the author of German Apartheid Politics. The German government has twice confiscated this group's bank account and now has declared them to be an extremist entity. Appropriately, Wieland is going to speak about this moment, about acting despite the repression. Wieland.
Thank you, Marilyn. And thanks for the introduction. Because of the shortness of time, I won't go into those things, but you've made important points regarding our collective. And when we talk about the moment, I think there are a lot of things that we might be talking about. Of course, this moment right now is the moment of extreme horror and urgency, and we're forced to watch while people are starved and murdered while starving even. But at the same time, what I feel we can call this moment is something that started 21 months ago. I think we're all joined in the understanding that things changed, not only for Gaza, Palestine, and the world, but also for our work as Jewish solidarity organizations. It's been a time of clarity where it's become apparent which people who maybe seem to be on the side of justice were conditional in their solidarity, who weren't willing to stay on the path if things became uncomfortable. And I think what complicates the role of Jews who are in the Palestine movement and who are explicitly referring to their Jewish identity rather than simply organizing as members of the movement is that we're not in the same position as Palestinians demanding their own freedom, their own rights. We are their advocates and supporters. And over the years, various habits and patterns have developed about how we use that role, how we do the work in order to support them and also to disarm our political enemies and the way they attack Palestinians, and they misuse anti-Semitism, of course. But I think the sharpening of the moment also calls for a sharpening in our thinking and also in our acting, because we have to see the ways in which some of the old discourse no longer lives up to this moment. Now, what I mean is, for example, the idea that, of course, we would try to shield our Palestinian partners from these bad faith and unfounded accusations. But sometimes this led to a dynamic where it seemed as if Palestinians needed the approval of groups like ours. They needed our kosher stamp to prove that they were not anti-Semitic and that they therefore had a right to express their demands and their rights. And I think it's time now, it's time for our roles to become more refined and more intentional, in the sense that we make very clear that our identity informs our work. And I think this habit that has developed of very often maybe in speeches saying, well, as a Jew, I say so-and-so, and, you know, this is not in my name, and all of this. And I think that's, to me, that's come to feel a bit tone-deaf, because, of course, we're trying to fight the claim that this is in our name, but there have to be times when our name is not the point, and it's the name of Palestine that's the point. And I feel actually that even just a very small shift from still being very clear in our identity and our messaging but just not constantly referring to it in the way sometimes maybe that we have, gives more space for Palestinians to be unapologetic in demanding justice. And I think that's something where we can learn a lot from Palestinian writers like Mohammed Al-Kurd or Stephen Salaita also. And Mohammed Al-Kurd especially talks about the expectation that Palestinians should deserve to have human rights, you know, as if they needed to earn the right not to be massacred. And that even if they were terrible anti-Semites, they would still deserve not to be massacred. So I think that even as we use our role to aim particular blows at the political enemy, I think we have to always be mindful that we are not somehow reproducing or entrenching assumptions and views and narratives that ultimately contribute to disenfranchising Palestinians. And at the same time as our struggle in solidarity with them, we also have a struggle against Zionism from within, against the Jewish Zionist establishment. And this is where I feel we can really be unapologetic about our identity, in the sense of saying that Zionism has turned Judaism or Jewishness in a broader sense, has made it seem synonymous with not only colonization and occupation, but now genocide, and has just fundamentally stained this history, this tradition, this identity, and that we should really go on the offensive. And of course, as Marilyn said, we being anti is not enough. We also have to find something beyond that and beyond Zionism. But I think we also have to recognize that Zionism will not go away without being attacked in a pointed and determined way. And that is a mission that we can undertake from the Jewish position in a way that can support the Palestinian struggle while that is waged on another front as well. So I think these are some of the challenges and some of the aspirations that we should have as Jewish groups standing with Palestinians. Thank you.
Thank you, Wieland. Our second speaker is Cheryl Nestel. She was for years a steering committee member of Independent Jewish Voices in Canada. Cheryl has a PhD in the sociology of education from the University of Toronto, where she taught and remains an affiliated scholar. Cheryl has been an activist on the Jewish left for over 50 years. She is one of the people who make GJP such a trove of experience. The manifesto we're discussing took shape in Cheryl's eye, and she was our lead writer. So we have asked her to speak to the task of building community as outlined in our manifesto. Cheryl.
Thank you, Marilyn. My name is Cheryl Nestel, as Marilyn mentioned. I'm one of two representatives, along with Sarah Boivin, of Independent Jewish Voices Canada at Global Jews for Palestine. IJV Canada is one of the largest and most active anti-Zionist Jewish organizations in the world. Founded in 2008, we've grown from a small collective to a thriving and influential organization with thousands of members. We employ 5 full-time staff and have 28 chapters across Canada. We were among the first Jewish organizations to organize resistance to the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance working definition of anti-Semitism, and we have held the line in Canada against mass adoption of the definition. And as Marilyn mentioned, after 10 years' struggle, we managed to get the Jewish National Fund to get their charitable status revoked, which is a huge victory. Our victories accomplished in coalition with our Palestinian and progressive allies included in addition, an unprecedented unanimous decision by the Canadian Association of University Teachers, representing 77,000 academic workers, to reject the adoption of the IHRA by Canadian universities. The exponential growth of Jewish anti-Zionist groups since Israel's genocidal response to the October 7th Hamas attacks reflects the widening chasm in Jewish communities worldwide. Increasingly under interrogation, both inside and outside the Jewish community, is the universally accepted narrative that Jews' vulnerability is an intractable problem that transcends time and space and can only be eliminated through the existence of a Jewish majority state where Jews are empowered to defend themselves at all costs. Within this framework, embraced widely by Jews around the world, even genocide is rationalized as resistance to annihilation. The late theologian Mark Ellis has named this form of Jewish communal politics Constantinian Judaism, a reference to how Christianity became a state-empowered religion under the Emperor Constantine in the 4th century. Constantinian Judaism, like Constantinian Christianity, links power and empire. A commitment to a militarized Judaism is a Constantinian Judaism, where Jewish energies, creativity, wealth, and political power in Israel and elsewhere are placed in the service of the state. Jews who challenge Constantinian Judaism are accused of weakness, disloyalty, self-hatred, or assimilation. Our very status as Jews is even challenged, inasmuch as supporting Israel and Zionism is now considered to be an inextricable part of Jewish identity, even though criticism of and opposition to Zionism has accompanied this political ideology since its inception. Ellis termed those such as members of Global Jews for Palestine, Jews of conscience. We are Jews who choose to wrestle with the ongoing consequences of 1948 while recognizing the horrors of pre-war anti-Semitism and the devastation to world Jewry of the Holocaust. We Jews of conscience endeavor to chip away at the wall of willful ignorance, which allows a triumphalist picture of the history of the Jewish state to occlude the Nakba and the ongoing Palestinian trauma of expulsion and elimination. The dilemma for Jews in this moment is whether to choose fidelity to or betrayal of what appears to be the Jewish communal consensus. There is something to be learned from the biblical injunction, you shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely reprove your fellow and not bear guilt because of him. This is drawn from the Holiness Code in Leviticus and appears just before love thy neighbor as thyself. It has been interpreted by the great medieval Sephardic Jewish philosopher and Torah scholar Maimonides thusly. He in whose power it is to prevent sin and does not take the means to prevent it, he himself is ultimately responsible for the sin, since it was possible for him to prevent it. This biblical admonition requires speaking out rather than maintaining silence about the transgressions of our communities. For some members of our communities, speaking out publicly against Israel's eliminationist policies against the Palestinian people constitutes a betrayal. However, fidelity to our community as it supports Israel can constitute a betrayal of another sort. The betrayal of the moral and spiritual precepts that are central to Judaism. These fundamental precepts, which are connected to both Jewish history and religious tradition, teach us that Jews are obligated to engage with the struggles for liberation of others. If we deny or refuse this imperative, and when others become our victims, argues Ellis, the brokenness of our past is betrayed, and our political empowerment is made suspect. When a politics of dispossession and racism is pursued, in the name of protecting and defending the Jewish people, dissident Jews loudly proclaim that we are not represented by such politics. Rather, we stand with those who are murdered, imprisoned, and made homeless and stateless by these policies. This was done to us. Why are we doing it or lending our support to those Jews who are doing it to others? We assert that it must be principles and not blood that determine where we stand. I want to pivot briefly to our manifesto and give you a few words about it, and I hope you'll read it, endorse it, and circulate it more widely. And we bring this manifesto as a challenge to the politics of Jewish ethno-nationalism in Israel and in Jewish communities worldwide. So first, dissent from Zionism is an ethical response to genocide. This is so important at this moment. We have to reiterate our ferocious and unequivocal opposition to the current genocide in Gaza. The second principle is Israel-centered Jewish life diminishes our diversity and our political, intellectual, and spiritual heritage. We reject an Israel-centered Jewish culture that has diminished our capacity to develop cultural and political formations that reflect our unique hybrid identities. We need new and inclusive communal formations, and I think this is a really important point. The already contentious relationship between mainstream Jewish organizations and the Jewish left is now irrevocably broken, and we have no other option than to create new formations. And we are seeing these formations blossom everywhere. Jews must reckon with our implicatedness in Palestinian dispossession. For far too long, Jewish educational and religious institutions have engaged in wholesale denial of Palestinian history. This history is central to any narrative about Israel, and we must deal with it honestly. We must amplify dissenting voices. Anti-intellectualism now infuses institutional Jewish politics, and it's time to pay attention to critical Palestinian and Jewish scholars and activists and other wise people who can help us along the way. We must reject the politics of Constantinian Judaism. And finally, anti-Semitism, which is a topic that occupies us a lot lately. Anti-Semitism is unique, but not exceptionalism, and we have to be well aware and alert for Jewish exceptionalism in all its forms. The weaponization of anti-Semitism has disingenuously conflated criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism, and this foments anti-Palestinian racism and obscures real anti-Semitism. Again, we hope you will endorse and help amplify and circulate our manifesto, and I thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Our third speaker is Ivan Zeta from Argentina. He is a founder of Jews for Palestine from Argentina. Ivan also works with legal teams to defend people who are being prosecuted for their social media. We also have member groups in Brazil, Chile, and Mexico. When a Jew from Toronto visits a Jew in New York, it's international, but we are global. We have asked Ivan to speak about the importance of our global solidarity, our global voice, right now. Ivan.
Thank you, Marilyn. I want to thank my comrades at Global Jews for Palestine for the tremendous honor of speaking here today. I'll try to be brief so we can get to hear from Dr. Gabor Mate as soon as... I want to share our perspective on the importance of global organization and strategy from the standpoint of anti-Zionist Judaism. I believe this perspective is also shared by my comrades from other Latin American groups who have joined Global Jews for Palestine over the past few months. We have Voces Judaicas por Libertação from Brazil, Judíos Antisionistas contra la Ocupación y el Apartheid, and Agrupación Judía Diana Aarón from Chile, and Judíos por una Palestina Libre, and Agrupación Mexicana de Judíos Interdependientes from Mexico. Many of our groups were already in contact prior to joining GJP, but we weren't sure about building a Latin American anti-Zionist Jewish network. We didn't know how, when, nor whether it was the right time. The fact is that as Jews living in countries dominated by global capitalism, we all share a common experience. While so-called developed countries provide Israel with weapons and funds to dominate the Middle East, in the so-called developing world, alignment with Israel, directly or indirectly, serves as a signal of loyalty to imperialism. At the same time, we're seeing Israeli corporations expand across our region, just like other colonial powers did in the past. Argentina's current government under Milei represents an extreme example. Over the next 2 years of his presidency, he has visited Israel more times than most of Argentina's own provinces. His alignment with Trumpism has produced a fanatical pro-Israel stance that distorts Judaism and includes a constant performance of loyalty, such as supporting Trump's provocations and proposing to move the Argentinian embassy to Jerusalem. Amid Israel's conflict with Iran, the Milei administration, the judicial power, with the full support from the opposition, that is, of course, also Zionist, have proposed a trial in absentia for the 1994 Amia bombing, a trial without defendants with a predetermined sentence aimed at justifying Israeli aggression against Iran. Other governments in Latin America, even those that have publicly condemned Zionist war crimes, have yet to take concrete actions. That's why we call across all of our countries for the total rupture of diplomatic, military, and commercial ties with Israel. In Global Jews for Palestine, we have found groups and people with diverse histories of organizing and struggles from different political and cultural traditions. But what's most important to us is the profound respect and genuine effort to integrate Latin American Jewish groups into an international network largely composed of members from Europe and North America. This has created a qualitative shift. Global Jews didn't just become international, like Marilyn said, it became truly global. And it can keep growing by continuing to embrace the perspectives of what some call the Global South. The Anti-Zionist Jewish Congress held in Vienna recently, this June, was a key step toward unifying and amplifying a global anti-Zionist Jewish voice. But looking towards 2026, there are two major challenges ahead. First, to be not only international, but global by including communities from the so-called Global South. Second, to fully include the organizations already active in each country's Palestine solidarity movement, groups that are taking the streets, that are putting their bodies on the line, that are shouting, "Not in our name." Israel has also hit their own global strategy. Its colonial project aims at a greater Israel that includes all of Palestine, along with parts of Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Iraq, and Saudi Arabia. But its strategy is global not only in its territorial ambitions. Israel maintains hegemony over Jewish communities around the world, using that power to secure a continuous flow of migrants under the toxic law of return, trying to outnumber Palestinians and preserve the fiction of a Jewish state. Israel is also a military and surveillance technology hub for global capitalism. It exports weapons and tactics tested on Palestinians, many of which our own governments have purchased and used to repress us. In Argentina, for example, the Palestine Solidarity Movement has long marched under a banner that reads, "The weapons that kill Palestinians are used to repress the Argentinians." So our task is clear. We must bring together all anti-Zionist Jewish groups around the world, no matter their size, their age, or whether they were born anti-Zionist or broke with Zionism recently. We need to create spaces to share experiences and strategies, to grow and to become the collective voice of hundreds of thousands of Jews around the world who refuse to let the Star of David be associated for the next century with the same atrocities the swastika represented in the last 80 years. Many of us, so myself included, reclaimed our Jewish identity precisely to say "not in our name" and to take away from Israel a key ideological tool. Many more will follow. And many others will break with Israel when they see that there is an alternative, a Jewish community that defends human rights and truly fights for never again to mean never again for anyone. So that would be it. Thank you very much for listening, and free Palestine from the river to the sea.
Thanks, Ivan. Finally, our very special guest is Dr. Gabor Mate, a retired...
Thank you. Am I supposed to start now? Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my name is Gabor Mate. I'm speaking from Canada. And Canada is one of the despicable countries. I should say countries. I should say governments that pay lip service to justice, freedom, equality, democracy, peace, and do everything they can to support what is unfolding before our eyes, which is the deliberate starvation of an entire people. And when I was Canada, which in a few months processed 1 million Ukrainian refugee claimants, has not able to process 5,000 Gazan ones without onerous restrictions. If you look at the actual practical situation of Ukrainians versus the Gazans is no justifying either one, but you can't can compare them on the scale of human suffering. 1 million Ukrainian visas, not even 5,000 ones from Gaza. And every country from which we're speaking from, whether it's New Zealand or Argentina or Germany or wherever, the governments are all complicit. And what I want to say here is this is far beyond a Jewish versus Palestinian issue. So that although we're addressing it as Jews in this particular meeting, it's far beyond us. It's the whole world system that Ivan referred to. It's the world colonial system that has decreed that Palestine is another territory for colonization and therefore, if necessary, for the extirpation of the local population, which has been the colonial practice everywhere, from Canada to New Zealand to South America to everywhere. What I want to say here is that we need to take this issue beyond just the so-called Palestinian-Israeli conflict. It's the issue of what kind of a world are we living in, which is this colonial world and colonial mentality. That's the first thing that I want to say. The other is that one doesn't know what to say anymore. One does not know what to say anymore. Today in the New York Times, front page headline, about the starvation in Gaza, when you read the article, more space is given to the Israeli explanations where the starvation is because of Hamas or because the international aid organizations won't deliver the aid. As much explanation, in fact, more space is given to that than to the actual reality, which has been documented by over 100 NGOs around the world, by the United Nations, by Israeli scholars and journalists, let alone the testimony of the Palestinians, that this was an engineered mass starvation. An engineered mass starvation that has us looking at photographs or videos of Palestinian children with their ribs sticking out. Where did we last saw some pictures like that? Well, I tell you where we saw pictures like that. We saw pictures of that in Biafra in the 1970s. We saw pictures like that in Ethiopia sometimes. And we saw pictures like that in Auschwitz, where I was 6 weeks ago. The difference is the Germans tried to hide their crimes. They really did their best to hide their crimes. And in the case of Biafra or Ethiopia, there wasn't the whole Western world justifying it and supporting it and enabling it or denying it. So this is almost unprecedented. An engineered mass starvation amidst a genocidal war, which is in front of our eyes, and the world is watching, and all the great powers are either denying it, justifying it, or making mealy-mouthed statements about it without lifting a finger. On the contrary, in last week, the London Daily Telegraph had a headline. You know what the headline was? This is from, the headline was, "Big sales for Gaza could stoke Jew hatred, the European Union warns." The anti-Semitism poobah of the European Union warned that people that are having bake sales to raise money, to send food to these starving children and adults of Gaza, they're stoking anti-Semitism by having bake sales. I mean, no satirist, no great author No Russian Bulgakov, the great satirist. No Shakespeare. No Cervantes could have possibly have invented such madness. And it would be absurd if it wasn't so tragic. So this is beyond just a Jewish issue. Now, as far as the Jewish issue is concerned, let's just be honest about Judaism. We can talk about the great traditions and values of Judaism. Maybe. Let's admit something, that the Jewish tradition, like other traditions around the world, is multifaceted. It's got different sides to it. If you read the Tanakh or the Torah, the five books of Moses, it's genocidal. It gives the Jews to massacre every inhabitant of Palestine. In fact, God even gets angry at the Jews for not doing it. Purim, the holiday, we celebrate the death of tens of thousands of Persians. Passover, the death of the killing of the firstborn of Egypt. And we celebrate this because it's all for us. And we thank God for what God has done for us. Yes, there's another strain in Judaism. There's a prophetic tradition. The prophetic tradition that says there's some higher value than nation state, than authority, than chauvinism. And that higher value is the truth. And you must not transgress the truth. Now, that prophetic tradition is always a minority, as it is in every other religion or every other culture. So certainly, what we're striving to do here is to stand with that tradition, that strain of Judaism that decries oppressing others. Thou shalt not oppress a stranger, you who were stranger yourself in Egypt. There's that strain. But there's also always the mainstream strain, which identifies more with the religious and chauvinistic aspects. So this is a struggle that's been going on for a long, long time. It's not new, and I don't think it's going to go anytime soon. I mentioned, now as far as our authority to speak, sometimes I'm presented as a Holocaust survivor and as if that somehow gives me special authority. It gives me no special authority whatsoever. There's lots of Holocaust survivors who totally identify with the state of Israel and whatever it's doing. The fact that we're Jewish, that doesn't give any special authority. Nothing gives us special authority. Any authority that we strive for has to come out of our willingness to tell the truth as human beings, Jews or non-Jews, to ally with other human beings who are also aligned with the truth as best we can understand it. So, yes, it's important to say that this is not in our name, but again, it's important to keep the context in mind that this is much larger than just a Jewish issue. Without the colonial system, Israel would be nothing. It'd be a small country. It wouldn't even exist, to tell you the truth. And this injustice that cries to the heavens, where the four of us or the five of us on this call, because we're Jews, we could, wherever we are, we could get on an airplane tomorrow, be in Tel Aviv 2 days later, be in the West Bank 3 days later, be offered homes and privileges and water and fields and protection, while the local population is denied any of that. Local population, as much as if they try to fix their homes that were damaged by the settlers, the army comes and says, that's construction without a license. We're going to demolish your home. This injustice cries to the heavens. The wonderful book, One Day Everyone Will Have Been Against Us, by Omar Al-Akkad. I hope people read Omar Al-Akkad's book. I also hope they read the book by Muhammad Al-Kurd, Perfect Victims, which, as Wieland pointed out, just speaks the Palestinian truth, uncensored, and with clarity and with courage. So read those voices. Now, Muhammad Al-Kurd, I should say, Omar Al-Akkad is not Palestinian, he's from Egypt, but he addresses Palestine quite a bit. And this is what he says here. And this calls upon all human beings. He says, the moral component of history, the most necessary component, is simply a single question asked over and over again. When it mattered, who sided with justice and who sided with power? What makes moments such as this one so dangerous, so clarifying, is that one way or another, everyone is forced to answer. This is a human issue. It's a global issue. And let me finish with something that the great Jewish writer Primo Levi wrote. When I was in Auschwitz, and I stood at the railway tracks where my mother and I almost ended when I was an infant, and where my grandparents did end on their way to the gas chamber. So when I was there, I was given this gift of 10 books, a big box set of books all about Auschwitz. Here are two of them. But this is a box set of 10 books. I've been reading them. One of the most beautiful books of the 20th century is by the Italian Primo Levi, who was a 23-year-old engineer in 1943, captured because he was part of the resistance in Italy. He was taken to Auschwitz and he was there until January 45, the liberation of Auschwitz by the Soviet Army. And he wrote this beautiful book called If This Is a Man. In English, it's also been published as Survival in Auschwitz, which is kind of a weak title. If This Is a Man is the real title. And he says on the very first page of this book, he says, many people, many nations can find themselves believing more or less consciously that every stranger is an enemy. For the most part, this conviction lies buried in the mind like some latent infection. It betrays itself only in random, disconnected acts and not as a system of thought. He says, but once it becomes a dogma that the stranger is the enemy, he says then, at the end of that chain stands the logger, stands the concentration camp. And people, that's where we've come to. Once Zionism decided that the indigenous population was the enemy, which it had to decide, otherwise they couldn't have established themselves with all the support of the colonial powers. But once they decided that the enemy is the indigenous population, is the local population, a local population, by the way, some of whose roots go back to ancient Jews, that's a whole other interesting story. But once Zionism decided that the enemy is the local population, then the concentration camp, as Primo Levi pointed out, was inevitable. And Levi, by the way, was one of the Jews that survived the camps, and later on, he stood for Palestinian rights. So if we stand for Palestinian rights, we're not doing it for Palestinians. we're doing it for ourselves, for our moral salvation, and if we're doing it for a world that at some point will wake up to the depredations of colonialism. And as Rabbi Tarfon said about 2,000 years ago, the task is not yours to finish, but neither are you free not to take part in it. So, you know what? I doubt I'll live long enough to see justice in Palestine. I don't know if anybody on this call will live long enough to see justice in Palestine. But we're talking about justice in the world. And it's a long-term project. And by God, they're not going to stop us. Thank you for listening.
Thank you so much. Thank you for situating this within and beyond Jewishness. We are all struggling with our inability to protect, but that's also an inability to stop. We have time for a couple of questions. Can you say a word, please, about the role of anti-Zionist Jews who live in Israel? How do we work with them? How do they fit into this movement?
Well, I would say, first of all, that they are in a very difficult position. Clearly, the Israeli state, of course, their first victims and enemies are the Palestinians, but they also show no qualms about using violence against any Jews who step out of line among their citizens. And there's also sometimes, I would say, especially in this last year and a half, where the more radical nature of circumstances has also made thinking more radical, that there are also those in the so-called diaspora who would say, look, if you're against Zionism, then get out of the Zionist state and deflate the project from within. You know, and of course, I can understand the logic, but this is not something that I think it's right to expect from everyone. And I think they need all the support they can get from the outside. And I think what we also have to accept, and this is where I would say, so where I would take some at times a kind of a something of a hands-off approach, because I realize that on the ground, sometimes one has to deal with circumstances that don't apply in the same way in other countries, and that, for example, allies whom we can easily see through as impure, immature, false in their views, you know, the liberal Zionist false consciousness and all of this, that it's also a struggle for our allies down there, to what extent they can afford to distance themselves from those people whose analysis is not, hasn't reached the same point as theirs. So I think it's important for us not to judge our anti-Zionist comrades in Israel. I mean, it's very clear which ones are actually anti-Zionist and which ones are not, and that indeed is the source of a lot of conflict on the ground down there, a lot of infighting, which then also might be condemned from the diaspora. Then with people saying, oh, you know, why are you calling to boycott Standing Together? You know, this is not helping anyone. And so I think, you know, they have to face problems that not all of us do. And I think I think often the one way we can help them maybe is to publicize what they are doing, as opposed to maybe what the bigger and more well-known and more mainstream groups are doing, you know, so that, for example, our member group Boycott From Within, you know, fighting on the ground, and always the small group of demonstrators who have always demonstrated against the genocide, not for the hostages, but against the genocide, and before that, against apartheid, you know, just in a small group, to really say, look, these are the people who really see through the problems. They don't just protest because they don't like Netanyahu or because they don't want to live in a theocracy. These are the people who protest against injustice, and take your cues from them. And, you know, think about whether the kind of liberal analysis that some people here like to promote as a sign that, oh, look, many people in Israel, you know, they have these values too. You know, we should support those with the more radical analysis against this idea that the milquetoast position is the right one.
Thank you, Wieland. I want to thank each of our speakers, in particular, Dr. Gabor Maté, for being with us. Thanks to Haymarket Books for hosting us. I also want to thank our GJP webinar and social media teams for all of their work. I invite everyone to please visit our website, read and sign the manifesto. If you have other questions, or if you'd like to find out about joining us, please write to our Gmail, which is in the chat. I want to leave you with this closing thought. We are being shown the most shattering reality of human suffering. But within those crowds, remember that each person is a whole person. Each person is unprecedented and loved and full of dreams. We who are safe, we must not stop speaking the truth for that person. We do not have the luxury of doubting that the truth matters. So don't stop. You needn't be alone. Come out and stand with others. Thank you for joining Global Jews for Palestine today.
That's it for us for today. You were listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. To listen to this episode or any previous episode again, you can go to CQUT's website at cqut.ca and click on the name of the show to see the archive. You can also find the link to this archive on CFRC's website at cfrc.ca. Until next time, I wish you a free, free Palestine.